Greetings, everybody. This is a Travel Addict podcast where you can hear candid stories and discussions about business and adventure travel from around the world, with activities such as trekking, diving, camping, driving, cruising, and just plain chilling out somewhere. We talk about lots of experiences in places all over the world, including the grand, the remote, the edgy, the risque, and ones of questionable merit. Education, fulfillment, and wonder enrich our lives. And of all the books in the world, the best stories are found between the pages of a passport. Stay tuned. Good afternoon, everybody. Malcolm Teasdale here, the Travel Addict. Well, it's been a while since I did a podcast, but there's a reason for that. I've been traveling. How did you guess? So, as you know, I like to go and sometimes get away and see some of Mother Nature's wondrous places on the planet. I will continue to do that for however long I can, which, who knows? Who knows? Life is fragile, and you never know when I may not get the urge anymore or I physically can't do it. So recently, I went to Norway. Now, it's not just Norway, of course. Norway is quite a large country, and it contains an area that people have heard about but not many people have been to called the Fjords. So a little bit about Norway first. So I was on a cruise ship sailing out of Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Basically got to Amsterdam after transatlantic flight, got on a 30-minute train ride to Rotterdam, and then got on a cruise ship right there, which sailed up into the Fjords. Now, Norway itself is quite large, and it does lay ownership to a number of other pieces of land around the world. Now, to name a couple, so there's Norway itself, which is huge, and there's Jan Mayen Island, which is an island very remote in the Norwegian Sea, sort of halfway between Iceland and Norway. No permanent residence, too darn cold to live up there. Then there's Bouvet Island, which is at the other end of the planet, basically. It's at the very south part of the South Atlantic Ocean, and it has the grand distinction of being the world's most remote island. That's Bouvet Island. In addition to that, there is Svalbard, which is northern part of Norway, set northerly of the mainland Norway, also known as Spitsbergen. Now, let's take a look at the capital there. Now, it's not really a capital, but there is a place there called Longyearbyen, and it just happens to be the world's northernmost settlement. About 1,000 people live there. So Longyearbyen, last four characters, B-Y-E-N. Now, when I mention this, that name, is it because some of the locals got together one day and said after a harsh winter, I don't know, it could have been a harsh summer, they said, a long year, it's bien. I'm just saying, long year, bien. Anyway, that's its name. Now, the northernmost city in the world, or town, is a town called Hammerfest, which is the northern part of Norway's mainland. 10,000 people live there. So, obviously, Norway is in the northern hemisphere. So, the national anthem is something called Ja, the Elsker det landet, meaning, yes, we love this country, and there's a reason for that. Capital is Oslo, and out of the population, about 82% are Norwegian, 18% are non-Norwegian, which means they're expats or people from other parts of Scandinavia or that little area of Russia which touches the border. Religion, about 75% Christian, 3% Islam, and there's 22% which are non-religious, which is quite high, probably more than any other country that I know of, where that larger percentage is actually non-religious. The Prime Minister today is Jonas Gahr Støre. He's been there since 2021. Now, the area is about 150,000 square miles. The country has about 5.5 million people. Oslo itself, as a capital city, is about 1 million. Borders Sweden, borders Finland, and as mentioned, it borders a little bit of Russia, about 122 miles there. So it's been established since 872. Now, it's part of the Nordics, which includes Denmark, Sweden, Finland, Iceland, Faroe Islands, Greenland, and the Åland Islands. Now, apart from the places I've mentioned, it does lay claim, Norway that is, to a couple of other areas of the world. And one of them is Peter I Island, which is south of South America. It's about 60 square miles. No one lives there, but it does have the occasional visitors passing through. And they keep a log of how many visitors has been there, by the way, and there's been 600. But the other land that they lay claim to is pretty large. It's about 1 million square miles, and it's an area of Antarctica. No one lives there. Well, not permanently. There are 12 active research stations there, which house 40 Norwegian scientists. So they go there periodically doing whatever they do. Permanent residents? Well, yeah, but they're not the human variety. The most popular residents there are snow petrel. That's a bird, by the way. It's all white. And the penguin, or the chinstrap penguin, which is a variety. It looks like it's got a strap around its neck. That's why they call it that. So when we talk about Norway, we can't but mention their past because it was part of prehistory as well. More about that in a little bit, but also the Viking Age. Now, prehistory or the prehistoric times, three sections of that. But there's a time frame which basically assumes the Nordics area of prehistory, a little bit different from other parts of the world. So the Nordic Stone Age, which is part of prehistory, is from about 8,000 BC to 1750. And basically, before that, there was the Old Stone Age, which lasted about 2.5 million years, by the way. Basic human development at that time, as you can imagine. But up until that time, people did not live long, obviously, you know, if the weather had anything to do with it. But, you know, they couldn't live. You know, they used stones. It was called the Stone Age, pre-Stone Age and the Nordic Stone Age. But as we got into the real Stone Age, they did cultivate land to a degree and reared animals. And because it's just stone, they did create pottery. Now, after that was the Bronze Age, which sort of developed through a culture coming in from mainland Europe, which actually taught them how to bring up cows, sheep, and grow grain. Okay, now bronze came in, which replaced stones. Now, with bronze, they could make weapons, tools, and they could do rock carvings. The rock carvings were a clue because in those caves where they lived, there's pictures of what looked like canoes, ships, people, animals, trees, and whatever. Canoes and ships, it was an indication that taking place at the time was warfare, fishing, and trade. You know, people on canoes and ships. They sailed somewhere, right? So it was an indication of those three things. Then after that, the Iron Age came along. And this is when, really, iron and steel replaced bronze for common use. Now, there's little we know about that era because the Iron Age, they used to cremate their dead. Basically, there was no human beings to dig up. Now, it's the final of the three-stage division representing prehistory, stone, bronze, and Iron Age. But this technology of the Iron Age spread through the Mediterranean and South Asia, which increased communication with other nations. Therefore, there was increased settlements, etc. So things started to develop a little bit more. Now, we can't talk about Norway without the mention of the Vikings. The Viking Age began in 793 and ended in basically 1066. Now, when Scandinavia sort of expanded, it was due to the Vikings. You know, they used it for trade. They raided colonies. They colonized them, actually, as well. They took ownership of them. But the first serious raid was actually in northern eastern part of England in 793. The longships came in, and they invaded what England called the Holy Land. Now, the island they raided was Lindisfarne. Now, I mention that because Lindisfarne is famous for something else, because there used to be a band, sort of a country folk band in England at the time called Lindisfarne, who made songs like Meet Me on the Corner and Fog on the Tyne, It's All Mine, All Mine, Fog on the Tyne, It's All Mine. Totally separate from what I mentioned there, but I do digress at times. Now, the Holy Land is a very northeastern part of England, very close to the border of England and Scotland. Now, that went on for quite some years, but basically the end of the Viking Age came in 1066. A few characters involved here. King Harald, spelt H-A-R-A-L-D, from Norway, decided to raid England, coming up the River Humber. But he was confronted by King Harold of England, H-A-R-O-L-D, Harold Godwinson. Now, he was appointed king because his predecessor, Edward the Confessor, didn't have any kids, so there was no succession to the throne. Anyway, what happened is that King Harold of Norway was defeated, barely defeated, which sort of represented approximately the end of the Viking Age. King Harold of England was sort of, they won that fight, but unfortunately, they were depleted. Guess who decided to invade England? It was William, Duke of Normandy, which came in at the southern part of England in the county of Kent. And King Harold of England knew that, found out, so rushed out to confront them. But depleted army, that was the end of King Harold Godwinson of England. And it was also the beginning of the Norman conquest of England. Interesting, isn't it? So history, basically. What the Vikings did for Norway, they raided countries, they colonized him. And think of a map of Scotland, the islands, Shetlands, Orkney Islands, Faroe Islands, Hebrides. They took over those islands because they were a little bit further south than Norway and were better for farming. So they needed people to sort of work those fields. They brought in thralls, which is Scandinavian slaves, to work those fields. The Vikings themselves, they settled in England, or they tried to settle in England, but they also settled in Ireland, Eastern Ireland, and yes, they did find Dublin, by the way. But the Vikings just didn't concentrate on that part of the world. They headed out west and discovered Iceland. Then they also headed further out and finally discovered Greenland. Now, internal to Norway, there wasn't just one monarchy. There were several, what they call petty kingdoms, little monarchies set up all around the country. And they used to fall out because they wanted to do these little power grabs. So the first king of Norway, Harald Fairhair, was appointed to sort out this mess. And it did for a little while. Meanwhile, the discovery carried on. And Leif Erikson discovered Newfoundland, which is now part of Canada. However, things started to pick up a little bit. The Middle Ages came, which is the 5th to the 15th century. Christianity was adopted. The country was at peace. However, things started to go wrong again with the succession to the throne. Rival kings' sons decided to duke it out, and they fell out with each other. And there was a lot of, because they were doing it, a lot of pretenders to the throne as well. So the peace restoration had to begin. So there was a king appointed, King Hakon Hakonsson, who was brought to the throne to create these clear succession laws. And after that, pretty sadly, that really fixed the problem. Population increased. However, we all know about this. In the 1300s, 1349, I think to be specific, the most fatal pandemic of all time hit, called the Black Death. Worldwide, it killed about 75 to 200 million people worldwide. Well, that's substantial. It's vague because little knew about it, but it actually killed two-thirds of the population of Norway. That was a Black Death. Sort of puts COVID to shame. Now, along the way, there was all these unions, get together by Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. Union was created to have a single monarchy over these nations. Sweden pulled out, though, and then Norway became a dependency of Denmark. This stuff went on ages. Denmark and Norway even entered the Napoleonic War, which caused a bit of an economic crash at the time. Then they reunited with Sweden in 1814, pretty much the year when the year before the Napoleonic War ended. And for those of you who don't know, what did the Brits do with Napoleon? A lot of people don't know this. They took him down to a remote island in the South Atlantic called St. Helena, where he died of stomach cancer after 6 months. anyway, Napoleonic War, it came and went. There's various disputes, embargoes, population increases, decreases, labor shortages, mass immigrations, and then independence from Sweden, etc., became. Then, big move, the right to vote for women came along in 1913, and women got into politics, which, of course, is a good thing. Now, during World War I, Norway, Sweden, and Denmark agreed to remain neutral. Norway even joined a League of Nations set up in Geneva, which was just a group of countries set up to sort out international disputes. But what Norway did, they made a mistake in World War II. They declared neutrality. So what that led to was not just Norway, but Denmark. They were invaded by Germany. In 1945, the war was over and Germany surrendered. That was a time the United Nations was founded. Now, the number of UN member countries today is about 193. So things started to look up. And then Norway joins NATO in 1949. Today there's about 31 NATO countries, I think. There were disputes, mainly because of oil and gas deposits in the North Sea, which was disputed by other parts of Europe. There was an agreement made with the European Economic Community, which eventually became the European Union. Today, the European Union consists of 27 countries, if you didn't know that. Norway never joined the European Union, but they had an agreement on fishing quotas. So things started to pick up, and women played a prominent role finally, and eventually Norway provided the first woman to ever command a UN peacekeeping force. That's Major General Kristin Lund. So things started to move forward. You know, that's a little bit of history of Norway there. Now, for me at least, my first stop from Amsterdam, or Rotterdam, I should say, was Oslo. Now, the only time I'd ever seen the changing of the guards is at Buckingham Palace, London. So this was the second time at the Royal Palace. Changing of the guards happens about 1:30 each day. So people gathered round in front of the palace. And the main guard outside the front of the palace was a female, a lady. Okay, and they were a bit of a procession of band playing, and they did the procedure of changing of the guards there. A number of things to see in Oslo. There's a big fortress there called Akershus Fortress, which was set up by one of the monarchs to defend himself for another monarch after being raided there. Big fortress, worth seeing. It even protected the country from Sweden when they raided it in 1716, I think the year was. Anyway, that fortress is still there today. But as you get into the fjords, well, the scenery just changes, and it's absolutely spectacular. First stop up north was Grangerfjord, and beautiful scenery. So the water is about 500 feet deep, but the mountains surrounding the fjords are about 5,000 feet high. So it's great to sail down there. And you know, when we got to Granger, the town, small community, so I decided to go hiking one day. I walked about 5 or 6 miles around the countryside. Felt perfectly safe. Excellent. And then next step along the way was Flam, home to the prettiest railway on the planet, apparently. So there's a little train that goes from the city of Flam to Myrdal, and it passes through various tunnels en route. And it stops even for a photograph session at Kjosfossen Waterfall, which is very pretty, so people can get off the train and have a photo session. Anyway, I'm not going to bore you with the history of the train there, but it's actually pretty nice. There's also lookout points. Steggestein Viewpoint is one of them, that you can look over the fjords on a platform that juts out into them. A bit scary, you know, because you're looking down at a big drop there. And then Olden was another stop, and most people go to Briksdal Glacier, which is a large glacier. It's about 4 or 5 square miles in area. So people want to see glaciers while they're up there. Then what else is to see? Well, different places en route. I've named a few. Sort of on the way back, we stop at Bergen. They have the old town there, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Beautiful area. Go shopping there and just soak in the culture. Very crowded. A lot of locals just eat out there. It's a good vibe. So Norway is a really cool place to visit. So I love Scandinavia anyway. I love the Nordics. And I've been to Finland and spent some time in Sweden as well. But for scenery, the fjords is a place to go to. It's one of Mother Nature's natural wonders. It's unspoilt. People live there. They live in peace. You can understand why they live there. Yeah, the weather could be a bit iffy. You got to sort of like snow, ice, on the cold weather, but they can live there in peace. They love it. That's why they live there and would not live anywhere else. And that's the truth. Beautiful country. If you get a chance to pay a visit, obviously some cruise ships do go sailing up there, either out of Southampton or Stockholm they can leave from, or even Amsterdam. Sail up there, probably take you a week and a half to get around there, and you can get off the ship and just walk around and enjoy the scenery. Well, the other thing is, what did add to this? It's funny because, you know, what did the Vikings give the British all those years ago? And this is a weird one. They gave it an element, a health issue called Dupuytren's contracture, also known as palmar fibromatosis. It's also called the Viking's disease. It's a condition of the hand where the fingers become fixed in a bent position. Now, the reason I say that, because I had that disease. Even though mild, it is, but my father had it bad. The problem is with it, the recovery time after surgery is substantial, 4 to 6 months. So my dad had the surgery on one hand. He said, to hell with it, I'm not having the other hand done. He was in his 80s. Yeah, but believe it or not, the amount of people I met, including Americans and Canadians who were inflicted with that ailment, I bumped into while I was sailing. And one guy said to me, the doctor told me I had Viking's disease. I thought I was going to die. The doctor told him, it's all right, you're going to live. Anyway, so that's what the Vikings gave the British. What did they give the Americans? Well, they gave them Minnesota Vikings, sort of indirectly. Isn't that fun? Yeah. But big influence. I mean, I know some people from Minnesota and North Dakota, but they've all got sort of Scandinavian last names. Well, what else is there to know about Norway? Minimum wage is very high, minimum $20 an hour, $22 to $25 an hour minimum wage. What else do? They introduce salmon sushi to Japan. Mention that when you go to a sushi restaurant next time. Many police stations run on office hours, often closed for the weekends. Can you imagine that happening in the country you live? Hard to believe, isn't it? Anyway, Norway has the world's longest tunnel, 15 miles. And what do they invent? And all the gift shops I went in there, they sold these. They invented the cheese slicer. They also invented the paperclip and the aerosol can. How about that? Now, other things of note. Norway is the largest producer of oil and natural gas outside of the Middle East. It also has a sixth highest per capita income in the world. Six. Well, who could beat that? Well, Monaco's number one, then Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, Ireland, and Bermuda is number five. So very high per capita income in the world. They invented the slalom on the ski slopes. Home of Edvard Munch's The Scream picture. You know you've seen it. And Thor, the God of Thunder. National sport is cross-country skiing. Well, I was there at the wrong time, so there's no chance I would see the Northern Lights. But if you go the right time of the year, typically between September and April, you could see the Northern Lights. But you've got to be further north, though. So, basically, what causes the Northern Lights? Well, here's my scientific, basic opinion. Now, the Northern Lights are actually results of collisions between gaseous particles in the Earth's atmosphere with the charged particles released from the sun's atmosphere. The variations in color that you see in the sky are due to the types of gas particles that are colliding. All right? Now, I don't know what gas particles cause what colour, but there's obviously lots of different gas particles in the atmosphere of the Earth. Hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, CO2, carbon dioxide, that is carbon monoxide, helium, neon, argon, ozone, a whole bunch of them. And all these particles that collide with the charged particles from the sun's atmosphere, this is what causes them. Now, just FYI here, best time to see the northern lights is actually mid-September to early April. Best place to see the northern lights is really above the Arctic Circle. So it's a fair way north. But the best practical place to see it is in a city called Tromso. It's north of the mainland. It is accessible. You have to go sort of a way high up into the mainland Norway to get there. But typically between those two dates of the year, September, April. Worth seeing. One day I will get to see them. Now, by fluke of nature, sometime you can view them at different times of the year. And I met people that actually saw them. But anyway, that's my bit about Norway. The fjords are fantastic fjords. Go and see them, folks. You'll love it up there. Anyway, got to get going here. Got things to do. And thanks for joining me today. This is Travel Addict signing off. Talk to you soon, folks. Bye for now. Have a great weekend. Many thanks for joining me today. This is Malcolm Teasdale signing off. Before I do, please check out my website, malcolmjteasdale.com, for more information about my travels around the world. Okay, folks. Talk to you later. Bye for now. Stay safe.